they need the permission of the husband. Said in the sixth Chachamim that the reason why they came together is in order for the men to show that they agree 100% with the donation of the wife. This is the reason given by the sixth Chachamim why it mentions here for anoshim al anoshim. However, in the Meshech Chochmah, he wonders why the Torah uses this word al. The word al means something above, on top. So why would the Torah use such a lotion, anashim, al anashim? Says the Meshech Chochmah that what it comes to hint to you is the following. When it says vayovoyu anashim al anashim, it means and they came with the donations which were on top of the women. Vayovoyu anashim, al anashim is a double meaning. One, that the men came with their wives, but it also hints to the fact that the donation was something that the women were carrying on top of them. Al Hanoshim. So if you wonder, why do the Jews have to be on top of the women? And if it wouldn't be on top of the women, what would be wrong? Said the Meshech Chochmah the following. The Gemara said that if someone says the following, in the Gemara it mentions kos, because a kos, a goblet, usually was very valuable in those days. So if a person says, kos ze labo de zora, he made a donation for a certain pagan worship, labo de zora, says like this, muter lehedio, even though he donated it for idol worship, since it wasn't actually used for idol worship, there is no prohibition against using that goblet for yourself, because it's not considered tashmishe avod zarah, because you know that anything which was actually used for idol worship becomes osur ve'anoeh. But if you only assigned it for idol worship, but it wasn't actually used, then there is no prohibition lehelion, which means to the simple person, to the individual. Avol osur lekoboya. This is a quote from the Gemara about this order. Avol osur lekoboya. Once a person assigned it for a pagan temple, he can say, you know what, I'll change my mind. I'll give it to the Beis HaMikdash. Why? Because for the Beis HaMikdash, it's a dovor mos. It's already disgusting. It's something that was already assigned for pagan worship, it becomes disgusting for the use of Beis HaMikdash. But personally, you can use it as much as you want. Okay? Now, we know also another piece of information which is necessary to build up to what the Meshech Chochmah says. We know also that there wasn't just one golden calf, by the way. Everybody thinks that there was one golden calf that the Jews built. According to our oral tradition, mentioned in the Gemara, it's mentioned in the Yalkut Shimoni right in last week's portion of the week, that when they said, Eile Elohecho Yisrael, Eile, these, not ze, Eile means plural. This implies that there were many. There was one main one, like in general, this is the way pagans used to work. They had a main idol, and then they would have identical little idols to carry around with them for their private parties. That was normal pagan procedure. So the same way it was with the golden calf. There was a main golden calf, and then there were a lot of little golden calves, and this is the meaning of Eile Elohecho Yisrael. So, what was the point? The point was that everybody, even after the golden calf was already built, everybody kept adding the donations for more golden calves. The more the better. Yes, in order that it should become widespread. So, it wouldn't be surprising at all that people would keep promising their wives jewelry. Except for one thing. Jewelry that the wives would actually be wearing. They wouldn't assign it to the idol. It makes sense that the jewelry that they had hidden or in their suitcases or whatever it was, the extra ones, that's what they would give. Because remember, the women weren't part of the whole thing of the golden calf. So therefore you can't say that the men convinced the women to give up their jewelry. So they couldn't possibly go over to the women and say, take off the earrings you are wearing. It must be that the earrings and all the other jewelry that the men brought were from where? Not from the bodies of the women. Because the women would never agree to it, because we know that they refused to cooperate with their husbands in the building of the golden calf, right? This is one of the merits of the women, that they weren't part of the city of the golden calf. So, on every piece of jewelry, there was a hanging doubt now. Once they built the golden calf, and now they have to build the tabernacle, what halachic doubt comes out now? Was it? Even if it wasn't used. Was it a sign? Remember, the law is that once it's a sign for idol worship, it takes on the halacha of mobus legoboya. You're not allowed to use it for a tabernacle. So what would be the only way that they could convince Moshe Rabbeinu, this is not the jewelry that was assigned for the golden calf?
You gotta bring your wives.
You have to bring your wives and show, look, they are wearing it. Oh, says the Mishnah, oh, this is the Mishnah. Vayoboyu, ho anoshim, ala anoshim, they say, the husbands came and they showed ala anoshim, look, they are wearing it. So therefore, they brought choch, onesem, betabas, vekumos, all those things that women wear on them. So this is the chat in Pasuk 22.
And then with the men assigned the jewelry, was it on their wives or the
other? No! The jewelry that was on their wives, they couldn't possibly assign. Because they knew that the women wouldn't cooperate. It was only the jewelry that they can get a hold of without asking their wives, without the permission of their wives. Not be that the jewelry that the wives weren't wearing. Right? Now, then it goes on to say, now, according to this interpretation then, we have to reject what the Sister Chachomim said, that the reason why they came together is for the husband to show that he gives permission to the wife to give the donation. Because according to this interpretation, it's the husband himself who is bringing it. Except that he's bringing it on the body of his wife in order to show that it was never assigned for idol worship. Now, so according to this comes out that when it says in Pasuk Chofei, V'chol ishochach maslei v'yotei otohu, it describes to you what the women did. They prepared whatever it was that they did with their hands, and they brought it to the Mishkan. What about here? How come the husbands aren't with them? Now, obviously, if it says Kolishochach Maslei, we are describing something very valuable. Because if you need Chach Maslei, that means that it's something that there was a need for very unusual skills. Otherwise, why would the Torah call the Chach Maslei? So what would you say that what they donated, was it expensive or cheap? If it says that it was made by Chach Maslei, by those unusual women with the unusual skill, so we must assume that they even donated things which were very expensive. Now, what if we say that in order to give expensive donations, women need permission from their husbands? So why doesn't it say in Pasuk Chofei that they got permission from their husbands? So the very special quality of the answer to this question is that the answer to the question a woman gave, and this is quoted in a lot of Sforim, Beshem, the mother of Reb Chaim Volozhiner, an unusual thing, the mother of Reb Chaim Volozhiner gave the following answer, and this is quoted in Sforim as the answer to the question. Listen to this answer. There is a Gemara in Ksubas which says the following. Why is it that Maisei Yodeho, that what a woman does, let's say according to the halakha, a woman has a job. Right? We're not saying according to the secular law, according to the Jewish law, according to the Torah law. In whose account does the money go in? According to the halakha, Maisei Yodeho, if she has a job and she earns money, or she makes things, she creates things, and she earns money from what she creates things, Levailo. Why? After all, it's her work. Says the Gemara, it's an exchange. It's an exchange for what? Because when they get married, he takes upon himself the responsibility of mezoinoi. He's going to feed her. That is his responsibility. Once he takes on this responsibility, he gets in return my seyodeo. This is what the Gemara says. Right? So, according to this, comes out, says the mother of Kribologiner, what about in the Midbar, when they got married? Could there be such an arrangement that it's an exchange? The husband takes upon himself the material support for the wife, and the wife takes upon herself that whatever she does belongs to her husband. In the Midbar, that doesn't make any sense at all. Why? They were all eating money. So therefore, there was no commitment from the side of the husband. Therefore, Maiseyodeo, the work of her hands, belongs to whom? To the wife. So therefore, they didn't need permission from her husband. Isn't it something? The mother of Chaim Volozhiner gave this answer. And this is the answer to the question. It's quoted in a few stories, the shame of Chaim Volozhiner's mother. Let's go on.
She was quoting the Gemara in Shulis.
She knew the Gemara in Shulis. I know she quoted the Gemara, but she knew the Gemara in Shulis. I mean, by the way, the Gemara in Shulis is a famous Gemara. That the reason why a woman has to... It's not like because she's a slave of her husband, right? People think that according to the Jewish law, she's like a slave. That's why everything that she does belongs to her husband. It's a business deal. As a matter of fact, the Gemara said that they can make up before. Amini zoinis, don't feed me. Feini oise, and then whatever I do belongs to me, or I won't do anything at all. She has the prerogative to choose whether she wants to be supported or not. Right? So there is such a thing, such a concept. So she knew this concept, but how she applied it to the Midbar and the man is beautiful.
That's a prenuptial agreement
existed then. Sure, of course. I mean, that's a prenuptial agreement that exists as long as the Torah exists.
Right?
Well, obviously not. Obviously, that's against the Sifsei Chachomim. But remember, many portions don't agree with the Sifsei Chachomim that that's the reason why the husbands came, right? So the Sifsei Chachomim is a separate opinion. Obviously, the Sifsei Chachomim is a different opinion.
So based on this, then the husbands really didn't have to come. The women could come all by themselves.
Exactly. The point
this
is
for
Maiseyodeo. But this is the jewelry that he gave her. It's his jewelry. Let's say he received it from his mother, or he bought it. And he gave it to her, to his wife, to use.
And he gave it to her, doesn't that become hers?
No, not necessarily. It's only Maiseyodeo. The halach is only by Maiseyodeo, something that she creates herself. Otherwise, he runs the household, he pays the expenses of the house. Of course, everything in the house belongs to him because of that. But we are talking specifically about Maiseyodeo, things that she created herself. But the jewelry of a wife definitely belongs to her husband. Except if she received it as a present, conditional she'ein le'bailo reshutbo. That's the only thing. Let's say somebody gives a woman a present and says, I'm giving it to you with one condition, that your husband has nothing to do with it. Then she has a right to keep it, and it's hers. Otherwise, it belongs to the household, which for marriage, because it belongs to the husband, because that's what he took on during the chuppah, to take care of the household.
How do we know where this jewelry came from? That is, my assumption would be that it came from the Egyptians, that it was taken from the Egyptians. The women...
Even assuming that you are right, so who does it belong to? To the people who took it.
Fine, but how do they know that it wasn't used in any kind of order or when they took it?
Oh, you mean originally? No. Once the interesting part is that all that jewelry which God gave to take from the Egyptians, right?
What is the mikvah?
What? Well, that's not it. He didn't have to go to the mikvah. It's considered minho hefker, loot, the booty from war, which is mutter for everything. It doesn't matter what use it had before. That's the halacha. If you go into a city and you win a war and you take the loot, you can use it for anything you want. We don't assume, or we don't have to think what was done with it before. That's the halacha. It's only when a Jew assigns it for idol worship, then it gets another halacha. Once he assigned it for idol worship, sure he can change his mind. He doesn't. Sure, he can use it himself, but you can't give it to the tabernacle because it's small. It's already discussed. That yes, but from a goy that was part of the booty from war, then it's not considered mos. It's mos. It's disgusting only if a Jew assigned it for idol worship.
And if he assigned it for idol worship, first worship, could he withdraw that?
Of course, he can withdraw.
No,
not for the temple. That's the one. Okay.
If you knew for sure that the Egyptian jewelry was from Avodah Zarah, can you still use it?
Even that, because that the Egyptians has nothing to do. It's not called mos. It's nothing. Let's go on to Pasuk Chof Zayin. The Hanesim, hey, Vigio, it's Abnei Ashoyan, it's Abnei Amoilui. And the heads of the Jews, the princes, whoever they were, we don't have any idea who the Nesim were, they brought the jewelry. This is very, very strange, because it says before that Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to the men and the women. There wasn't a direct command to the Nesim, to the princes. So why all of a sudden are they mentioned? The second problem is the spelling of the word Nesim. Do you see the strangeness of the spelling of the word Nesim? It's missing a yud. At least one yud. Sometimes you even write it with two yud. But at least one yud, this is how it appears throughout the Torah. It's very unusual that the word Nesim in Moshe Chof Zion should appear without any yud at all. So you have the two problems. What are they doing all of a sudden now? Bringing down the Ashoyam, they weren't commanded separately. They are Jews like all other Jews. So if they are Jews like all other Jews, they should have been already included in the gold and the silver and the different materials that they brought before. Says Rashi here. Ve'hanesim heviu. Here there is a mistake in the quote of Rashi in most of the Chumashim, because Rashi's quote should be like in the Torah. But and if you see most of the Chumashim, it says with a yud. It's a mistake. Should be without a yud. Omar Rabbi Nos. So Rashi quotes from the Gemara. Ma ro anesim lisnade yechanukas amizbeah bitchilo. When it came to the inauguration of the tabernacle many, many months before, six months afterwards, they were the first ones to take part. Uvebelekes amishkon, and here, lo isnadu bitchilo. You see from the Torah, if it says, and the nesim broke at the end, the stones, what is it implying? That they were not included in the giving that is described before. True? Rashi continues quoting. Elotachom Nesim. The Nesim justified it by saying the following. Let's not get involved in the beginning. The people will bring whatever they want to bring. Umashem Mechashrin, whatever is missing, we will take care of. This is the attitude of Nenosi. We will take care of things which are missing. We are not going to go with the crowds. It's not fit for our position. Once everything was taken care of, that they brought everything which is necessary. What can we bring? I mean, everything is already taken care of. So they brought this special stone. Leka is nabu the Hanukkah Zavizbeah. So therefore, when it came, when they realized that they made a mistake, that they waited too long, when it came to the inauguration of the temple, they decided, we are not taking any chances, let's do it from the beginning. Says Rashi, Ulefishen is atzlu, because they showed laziness, which means, why do you think they really, what was behind their waiting and saying, you know what, let's not run with the crowd. Whatever the crowd won't give, this is what we are going to do. What was behind it? The feeling of atzlus, like laziness, you know, like let the crowd run around. We? It doesn't fit for us to run around. So therefore, nechzero oish mishmom. This is why they lost the letter yud. Ve'hanesim ksiv without a yud. So I found them before she. What is the hint of the letter yud? What's missing with the letter yud? You know what the symbolism of the letter yud is? The Maharal says that the number 10 is the symbol of the tzibur. This is the symbol of the tzibur. The Maharal says that all the numbers between 1 and 10, 2 till 9 in other words, are single numbers. 2 are 2 singles. 3 are 3 singles. 9 is 9 singles. 10 is the first unit of a group. What does it mean? 1 is a unit. The next unit after 1 is 10. What does it mean? In the same way, for instance, we have the Ten Commandments. Really, it's one thing, the will of God, but it breaks up into 10. If you understand what's behind the 10 there is always one. The oneness which unites the 10. Right? God created the world with 10 sayings. It's the Shorom Amoris Nibroilom. 10 times it says in praises, Vayomer Hashem, Vayomer Hashem, Vayomer Hashem. Why? He created one world. But on the surface, we see parts, 10. 10 is always the parts which have the unity behind it. This is why the Egyptians had to go through 10 plagues in order to recognize that God controls the world. There is a oneness, there is a Hashem Echod behind it, and through the ten, you have to see the one. That's the purpose of the ten, to see the one. This is why, when you have nine Jews, you have nine Jews, but when you have ten Jews, what do you have?
A million.
You have already a group, that's Sigur.
It's the number to perfection.
What?
Take a number to
perfection. Yes, that is because we say that nine represents the chosher, missing. Nine is always missing. When you have a ten, you have something complete. This is why Avraham Avinu, when he has to pray that there should be an organized group of tzaddikim, that they should create a unit of God-faithful people. So how many people does he ask for? 10 for each city. It's not that he's asking for 50. They're asking for 50 men. Remember how many cities were at stake?
Five
cities. 10 for each city. Because 10 is the minimum. And you see, when it ends the request, what is the last number which he uses?
10.
10 is the last number which he uses. Because less than 10, they have no power. Right? So therefore, when we say that it is seen, they didn't do it the way it sounded on the surface because they felt the responsibility of the tzibur. If they would have done it because they felt the responsibility of the tzibur on their shoulders, this is why they said, you know what, let's see what everybody else brings because we are here to make up, to be mashlim, to make up what's missing. Then they wouldn't be punished. Then you couldn't say that they realized that they made a mistake. If they realized that they made a mistake, it must be that why did they do it? Because they didn't care much about the crowd. They didn't want to mix with the crowd. Here. It's one of two reasons why they didn't go with the crowd. Either the reason is what they said, ostensibly because they wanted to make up what the crowd doesn't do, because they feel the responsibility for the crowd, and that is a very nice virtue. Or what else could be the real reason? Not the reason that they gave. The real reason is what? We are going to mix with the crowd. Let the crowd go. Will come, you know, when we are needed. And what is the real reason? We know that was the real reason, that it was absolute. They didn't feel like going with the crowd. So what was missing in them? The feeling of unity with the crowd. The sense of tzibur. And which is the letter which represents the tzibur? Yud. This is why the yud is missing here.
What is the actual punishment? Was there the punishment that we would take that unit? Is there suffering?
No, of course not. The whole point, the word punishment doesn't mean punishment. Punishment in Torah means consequences. Right? It would be punishment. The moon spoke to God and said, why do you make rain? So the moon was punished. The moon had free will. We are talking about consequences, not punishment in the sense that we use it. It's your fault. Consequences. You should know that there was a consequence. How do we know that there was a consequence? The unit missing. That's a consequence, not a punishment.
Does it represent other consequences?
Obviously, there were other consequences that we know nothing about. But where is the hint in the Torah that there were consequences in the yud?
There's one yud in the text.
No, there is no yud in the text. In Rashi, you have a yud and it's a mistake.
In you said Chof Zayin, right?
Chof Zayin.
First word. I have a plural, Rabin.
You don't have a yud, Behanasiim.
Between the
Aleph and the Mem, you have a yud. You also have a yud? Very interesting. Very interesting. So according to this, if that is the correct text.
But in the Rashi, there's no yud.
Interesting. You have in Rashi no yud at all?
No yud at all.
Interesting. We have a yud in the Rashi. And we don't have a yud in the text. Now, don't be surprised about these differences. Don't be surprised at all. It's pretty common that we have differences of opinion about yuds and votes. Very, very often. There is a sefer in the back. If you have the Mikrois Doilois, there is like additions to the Mikrois Doilois, which tells you all the differences in different texts of Sefer Torah. But whatever it is, even in your text, you still have a yud missing. The first year. According to our text, we have two guys.
This is the more important one. The first year is the actual word.
The nasi, the yud, which is in the word nasi itself. You're right. But this is an interesting difference in the text itself. I wonder how it is in the Sefer Torah itself. I'd be interested to know how it's in the Sefer Torah itself. Let's go on. Now, take a look at the strangeness of both of this. Extremely strange. Poshut Chof Ches is really the end. then, because the Nesim brought the stones and they brought other things, and now also Chofetz is apparently summarizing. Kol ish ve'isho, asher nodav libo moishon, lehovi lekol amelocho, asher tzivo Hashem lasoy biyad Moshe, heviu bnei Yisrael netovol Hashem. Now, if you translate it, you realize the strangeness of the pasuk. If you want to summarize, how would you have said it? All Jews, men and women, brought whatever was necessary, period, end of statement. Is that what you would expect from a summarizing statement? Look at the statement. All men and women who were who made an endowment, who donated with their hearts to bring whatever work was necessary, whatever melacha was necessary, whatever creating work was necessary, Asher tzivo Hashem lasoy biyad Moshe, which God commanded in the hands of Moshe to tell the Jewish people, whatever you can do, you should do and bring it. Heviu bnei Yisrael netovol Hashem. These last five words just don't make any sense at all. The verse would be perfect if it would end with biyad Moshe, period. Men and women who felt like bringing the whatever they brought, whatever God said to Moshe. What is the Heviu bnei Yisrael netovol Hashem?
Showing the cover.
What do you mean?
They brought it and for the double Hashem.
They brought it, but it already says Hashem, no doubt we bought. So you know, it is a little bit strange. So it's either the Malbim says what you are saying. So the Malbim is bothered by this, and he says, what we might say is that there must have been people who were too poor to bring anything. Something like you are saying, but it goes on one step further. Says, obviously, not everybody was rich, because we know that not everybody took the jewelry from the Egyptians. We know that many people refused to take any jewelry from the Egyptians. The Medrash says so. We also know that the other source from where the Jews became rich is that after the crossing of the Red Sea, they got all the jewelry that they had put on their horses. But again, the people at the high level of the Bnei Israel, they didn't spend time gathering the jewelry. So what did they have? They had absolutely nothing. They went out of Egypt without anything at all. What can they offer? Says the Malbim, this is why the Pasuk tells you. Heviu Bnei Israel netovol Hashem. The Bnei Israel, their readiness to bring, even though they didn't have, was a sufficient netovol Hashem. This is the way the Malbim understands this statement. Heviu Bnei Israel netovol Hashem. The fact that the nation, they brought nothing, but Bnei Israel heviu. It's the Bnei Israel that counts. Okay, so understandable as pshat in the Pasuk.
Yes, not just pshat, the Bnei Israel means the other
people. Yeah, that's the pshat. Bnei Israel, those people who had no money at all, because they were Bnei Israel, they were doing well with other things to bother in the gathering of the jewelry, so they also brought a netovo. What did they bring? Bnei Israel Hashem, netovo. They wanted to bring. Netovo doesn't mean necessarily a donation. Nedovo means that feeling of wanting to be by the donation. That's what the word Nedovo means. It means vaslei. This is how we learn
the job.
This is how we learn the Jews, because...
Nature, that's what Nesrael are usually... I think it's a bit interesting to Moshe Rabbeinu when he had to do the second Luthos.
Yeah.
The Hashem created sapphire quarry or something, and under his tent, and he took the sapphires, and he carved out the luchot, and Hashem said, whatever you don't use,
it's for you. So he became rich.
Because he was carrying the bones of
Yosef. He wasn't the only one. But let me ask another shot, which is a very, very interesting shot, and the name of the sefer rises up. The name of the sefer is Koyemes Yitzchok.
What is the problem? But you should live in Israel there?
No. The whole statement, a view of Israel and the double Hashem is redundant. It doesn't teach me anything. The summary is already done with it is finished with the first part of the Pasuk. So he says the following. He says, you know that there is such a concept in Judaism called segula. What is a segula? You know, the Gemara says that there are certain, sometimes, are you allowed to wear a segula on Shabbos? What is a segula? Let's say something which you believe is good for your headaches. You go to a certain person and he says, you know what, I'll write down a certain name and you wear it and that will take away your headaches. What? Amulets. That's called segulos. So the Gemara says that there's a Mishnah in Shabbos which says, if it's something which works, you can wear it. Right. So what is this concept of segulos? We can call it supernatural. It's not supernatural. The only word is paranatural. I mean, it's not natural, which means there are some things which have effects on certain things that happen in the world which cannot be understood according to natural law, but it's definitely not within the realm of the supernatural. We don't call it anes. It's not anes at all. It's called a segulo, a paranatural cause and effect relationship. Now, for instance, let me give you an example. For instance, we have a mezuzah. Mezuzah is a mitzvah. But it says in Sephorim that mezuzah is also a segula that things shouldn't go wrong in your house. What does it have to do with the other? It's a segula. It's paranatural. It's not supernatural. It's not natural. It's paranatural. It's segula. There is a famous story with the Marshal. The Marshal in the back of the Gemara, there's a commentary of the Marshal in the 15th century. And there is a famous story of the Marshal that once the Marshal decided that his old building, he had a yeshiva, and they decided to build a new yeshiva. And there was a certain person who gave a lot of money for the building of the yeshiva. And he knew that the person couldn't afford it. He just knew it. And he didn't want to take the money. So the Marshal himself went over to the man and asked him, listen, you know, you can't afford it. I'm not ready to take the money that you can't afford. You know, can you imagine those money collectors of the olden days, right? If you can't afford it, I'm not ready to take the money. So the man said, it's true. This is really almost my last cent. But he says that he's married, he has no children. And since he has no children, he wants to keep the money for the building of the yeshiva. So the Marshal says, you're giving the money for the building of the yeshiva, and that will bring you a son. Marshal says, the end of the story. Oh, so all right. So at the end, so he did take the money, but at the end, a year later, the wife gave birth to a child, and there is a whole follow-up on that story. There is a follow-up that he brought the more. The Marshal told him, you're going to have a son, and your son will come to my yeshiva and learn. That's what the Marshal told him. So when he was a young kid, the father brought him to the yeshiva. And in the beginning, people didn't remember the story. So they didn't want to take him. He was too young. And he said, the Marshal promised me. Nobody knew what he was talking about. So finally, they brought him from the Marshal. And he reminded him, remember many, many years ago that I gave the money to that? And you said that you're going to take him in. So now you have to take him in now, even though he's only 10 or 12 years old, whatever it is. So the Marshal took him in. So there's a nice ending to the story. But what does the story teach us? That there is a connection between the building of the yeshiva and it's a school to have a boy. Says the Koyel Sitzkov, really, it's a Gemara. It's a Gemara in Moed Kot. See, the Marshal didn't make it up. The Gemara in Moed Kot in the Tesom et Aleph says the following. It's in Melochim Aleph, it's a Pasuk in Melochim Aleph, after Shlomo HaMelech finished building the Beis HaMikdash, and the day of the inauguration, it says, B'yoyim HaShmini, on the eighth day of the inauguration of the vineyard of the Beis Hamikdash of Shlomo HaMelech, everybody came, Vayvorchus HaMelech, Vayelchu Le'oholeihem, and they went back to their tents, the Jews. They were so happy because of the inauguration of the Beis Hamikdash. Smeichim V'toyve Leim. Al Kol HaToyvo, etc., etc. Says the Gemara, there is a formal tradition that says, how come the Pasuk tells you that they went back to their tents and they were happy? Because of the oral tradition, they all went and they found that their wives were in a state of purity. And semeichim shekol echot ve'echot, each one who took part in the inauguration of the temple, nisabru ishtoi, his wife became pregnant, beben zochor, and they had a child. They had a boy. So here it says clearly that the building of the Beis HaMikdash was a segulo for having a boy. It says clearly in the Gemara. So the Marshal didn't make it up. Says the Koyel Sitzkov. Now let's turn back to Pasuk Chofetz. Now remember, which generation is this? This generation that's bringing the money to the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan. This is the generation that didn't make it. Right? They didn't bring at the end. I mean, they were in the Midbar, but they didn't really bring coming to Eretz Israel and coming to Eretz. Which generation did make it? Their children. So they collected. Call Ish Veisho. They collected. Every man and woman. Again, men and women. Asher notavti bo moishom lehovi lechol amelokho asher tegu asher lashet yad Moshe. All those that took part of the Medobo, heviyu b'nei Yisrael. They brought to the world b'nei Yisrael Medobo l'Hashem in order to serve God. What did the Sahih do? Their children. Because they all got pregnant and they all had boys which were their Medobo l'Hashem. That's the generation that came into as Israel Medobo l'Hashem. This is the thing. Now, look at it this perfectly. B'nei Israel. And really, I found this foreign that the Loshon Ben and the Loshon Binyan is very closely connected. What is the word? The word Ben and the word Binyan, building, is connected. The word Ben means a building. So, they took part in the Binyan. So Hashem paid them with the Ben.
So they brought in children. Have you, B'nei Israel? So
they were so great. They merited that they brought to the world B'nei Israel. They brought B'nei Israel to the world. This is
what
I said. This is how they created
it. What was the segula in the last 2 minutes?
Sure. You see from the Gemara that there is a segula, that there is a natural connection between the building of the Mishkan, the building of the Beis Hamikdash, and having boys. You see from the Gemara. So here it's hinted. Right? Lekemited and Loyremise Berlite said there is no such a thing as something that you find in a Gemara, that there is no hint somehow somewhere in the Torah. This is the hint for this Gemara and for the story of the Marshal. Gemara, that Tesla Medalit in Moed Kotel. Now, one last thing. If you take a look, you know, before she asks, when you find in Parshas Kisiso the commandment to build the Kior, it says like this in Parshas Kisiso. In chapter 30, Pasuk Yudches. Ve'osiso kior nechoshes, ve'kanoi nechoshes, le'rokso. You hear? You shall build the basin made out of copper, le'rokso. So here, it doesn't only say the vessel, it says the purpose. What is the purpose of the kior? To bathe, to wash, le'rokso. Right? It's very strange that when the Torah here in Parshas Vayakel says over the building of the kior, in Kisiso is Lamed Yudchet, 30:18. But if you take a look here in chapter Lamed Zayin, let's see. Where is it? Lamed 37, Moshechet. Vayas et akir nechoishes, veskano nechoishes. It doesn't say the rochso. The other strange thing, because usually Parshas Vayakel is very faithful to Parshas Kisiso and Truma and Tzavet. Whatever was commanded, they did. Here, it sounds like there was a change.
Sometimes it adds,
but here the Rokso is missing. Why doesn't he say the Rokso? He says by the Menorah, and they built the Menorah to light, and they built the why is missing the Rokso? So it, again, this is from the Meshech Chochma. It says like this: there is something else which is strange. In Pasuk Chet here, it says that you know where they got the copper, the Nechoishes. From the Marois Atsoivois. Marois Atsoivois means
mirrors.
The mirrors. Why does the Torah have to point out, you should know, that they got it from the mirrors? Says Rashi right here on the spot. Because when Noish Yisroel, when you be on Marois, Sherois, Bohem, Kishem Iskashtois. It's the mirror that they used when they used to make themselves up. Says Rashi, but there is a story behind it. Because when they came and offered those mirrors, Moshe Rabbeinu said, this is disgusting. Remember, we spoke about the concept of molds. Even though it's permitted, but it's molds, it doesn't fit. It doesn't fit for the Mishkan to be built with the mirrors that you use to show off your beauty. For that, it's something so physical that it doesn't fit for a spiritual place like the Mishnah. It's the Yetzer Hara. It's no Yetzer Hara. It's the good side of the Yetzer Hara. Like the Gemara said this. The good side of the evil inclination. What is the good side of the evil inclination? When you use it for something good. Why of it? To me, there is nothing more appealing to me, more precious than this mirrors. Why? The armies of Hashem that the Jews built up in Mitzrayim was only thanks to those women who used those mirrors. Why? The husbands were so involved in doing the work for Mitzrayim, so they would go out to the fields and make themselves up. And they would have marital relations, and that's how they got pregnant and they had children. Without them, there would be no Jewish people at all. So therefore, it's something precious for me. Then says Rashi, I'm skipping to the end of Rashi, Benasei Akior Nehem. And therefore, the Kior was made with those mirrors. What is the connection between the Kior, the basin, and the women using the mirrors to make themselves up? Because there is another purpose for the mirror. Not only to wash up. Whenever a woman is a soite, which means there is a breakdown in the relationship between husband and wife. There's a breakdown in the relationship. The husband suspects the wife, and the wife does things against her husband. That's the mice of soite. So how do you bring peace? How do you get back the confidence on each other? The only way was to bring them to the Beis HaMikdash. And if the woman would bring the water, and then the water would have a positive effect, it says. Except if she was lying, then of course she deserves whatever curse she got for drinking that water. But if she was innocent, which is what we are hoping for, that it's in order to rebuild the confidence in each other, then it would create shalom bayis again. So comes out, according to this, that when was it decided that it should be the mime of the kior that they use for the main soite, that the soite should drink in order to bring back peace in the family? When was it decided? Only after Moshe realizes what are they bringing? The nechoshes from the mirrors. So it comes out, according to this, that originally what was the only purpose of the basin? Originally, when the rochto. So therefore in Parshas Kisiso, when the commandment is given, it says clearly the basin is for washing. But now, once Moshe Rabbeinu accepted the copper mirrors, so what new purpose was added to the basin now? The drinking of the soite, so you can't say Lerokso anymore. This is why it's missing. You hear the message of Moshad? It has to be missing. Because now that we mention Maris at soy boys, then we are adding a new purpose for the basin. So it's not Lerokso. This is why the word Lerokso does not appear here. But you can't. You see, what Hashem's original knowledge is, that can't affect the writing of the Torah. Now, the writing of the Torah is what was known at the time. When the commandment was given, what was the purpose of the basin? Only to wash, no other purpose. It was only added. A second purpose was added only once Moshe received the copper mirrors. And he asked God, listen, how can we use it? He says, what do you mean? This is the most chovit, the most precious for me. And we are going to use it to bring Sholem Ben Yisrael. Oh, so that's like now that they brought. But they had to have free will to bring it. You see, Hashem couldn't say it originally, because Hashem wanted to give them, the women, the free will to offer those mirrors